I'm joined today by Gary Marcus, a mobile consultant in the Boston area who's been developing mobile apps for the past 2 years. I guess the first thing is, Gary, why build a mobile app when I could just have a mobile website? I already have the skills, I already have the infrastructure.
You might do it because your competitors have already done it. But I would say the best reason to do it is to get feedback from your customers. With a mobile website, you don't know if you've done a great job or customers love it or if they hate it. With a mobile app, you're getting daily reviews from 1 to 5 stars. You're getting requests from new features. So I say feedback is one reason. Another reason is performance. A native app is going to perform much faster, be more responsive than a website. Also, the usability will be better. Studies have shown that performance with mobile apps have 20% higher ability to reach the goals than non-mobile apps.
Is that due to the abilities of the browser, or is it that you have more?
I think it's because people are familiar with the operating system interface, whereas a browser is sort of a hodgepodge of a number of different interface elements. If you have an iPhone with iOS 7, all the apps have a similar look and feel, and you're familiar with those conventions, so it's less of a learning curve.
Yeah, it's enough difficulty to get a website looking the same on a desktop with IE, Chrome, Firefox.
That's true. That is a challenge to itself.
Regarding usability, you say that the mobile app tends to be more usable. Why so?
Well, I think that, like I said, with an iOS 7 app, customers are familiar with the iOS 7 elements. They know how all the Apple apps work and all the other apps work similarly, so there's less of a learning curve. The swipe gestures offer the same. The tap gesture offers the same. It's primarily a learning curve issue.
But does that then mean you have to develop specifically for each platform?
Yes, you would have to develop an iOS 7 app or an Android app. There are third-party solutions that let you build sort of a meta app that will work on multiple platforms. I haven't seen one that's great yet, although maybe there will be someday.
I know Xamarin are a local company in the Boston area that are trying to crack that. Mm-hmm. Have you had any experience with them?
No. I've actually tried some interesting software from App.io that will run an app in a browser, but that's quite slow and inefficient at this point.
So Gary, if you already have a team of developers that are not familiar with app development, how do you approach app development?
Yes, I'd recommend sending some of the team members into a training program, but also to seed that team with someone who's already proficient with developing apps.
Have you looked at maybe hiring third parties or anything like that?
Yeah, I've actually had good success with nearshore and offshore developers.
Did you find that they were as advertised, their skill levels, competences?
So the nearshore developers that I've used are in Canada, mm-hmm. are awesome, mm-hmm. and they're quite expensive. Offshore is very good, but requires significant amounts of TLC.
Pretty much the same as you have with offshore development outside of the app world.
Yes.
I think. So there's clearly another cost associated with development. You can't just rely on the 40-hour week of your internal developers. You have to supplement it. What other costs are associated with app development?
It's really the same as software development. I mean, there's a back-end component, too, that people tend to forget about. Mm. So that's going to be your team in-house already has that skill, most likely.
And hopefully you've got something like web services that are written and they're accessible either from a website or a mobile app.
Yes. But other than that, the expenses are the same with any software development team, computers.
What about things like launching it into a store, branding?
So launching in the store is another skill, but that's easily trained. Whether you're putting in the iTunes Apple Store or the Google Play Store, there's a lot to learn there from an App Store optimization perspective. You need a graphical designer involved. But again, that's similar to creating content for your website.
When you say there's a lot involved, is it that the stores have made it difficult for the deployments, or just to get the best possible launch is difficult?
Not necessarily that the stores have made it difficult. But there are certain things. So say you want your app to be found, by people who are searching for a particular clothing, article of clothing. In order to do that, so Apple has 100 characters for metadata, for keywords. So you've got to choose those 100 characters such that they're not commonly sought off by other people. So if someone's looking for hoodies, for example, you want your app to come to the top of the list. But if there's a lot of competition for hoodies, then hoodies may not be the right term for you.
Hmm. So then you look around, maybe get some external help, someone like Compete?
There's sort of like an SEO skill for managing those keywords.
Again, regarding costs, once your app's been launched, you clearly don't have as much control over what happens on the device. Bugs get reported. How do you deal with that side of maintaining an application?
Right. So one of the most overlooked aspects is that you have to put in some crash analytics into your app. If you don't put a crash analytics SDK into your app, then you will miss 90% of your crashes, or you'll hear about them from your customers.
Mm. How does the crash analytics work?
So if the app crashes, the next time the app launches, it will send a full stack trace to a server, along with the time of the crash, the device operating system, the app version, details, enough details that'll let the developer isolate it and correct it.
It's a good stack trace, like you'd have if you had a local. Is that something that you would write yourself, or you'd pay a third party to provide the service?
Oh, I'd pay a third party to do that. It's a very specialized thing, and there are only a few companies that do that.
So after your initial launch of your app and you got maybe 1 million downloads, what do you do then?
Well, the first thing you do, once you launch it into the wild, you have to watch it carefully for crashes and fix any defects that might arise, because they will annoy your customers. You will also be subject to operating system updates that will break your app. Third-party services, Facebook might change their API, they'll require an update. Yahoo will stop supporting their currency converter. There are lots of reasons for updates. Apple will come out with new phones with different screen sizes. So there's no shortage of maintenance.
Is there a lag between the development and then the submission to the store, approval, and distribution?
For Apple, it used to be about 2 weeks, but now they've got it down to 3 days.
2 weeks, it could be very significant, especially if you have an app that's bringing a sales app, for example.
Yes, there's also a special clause, like if you screw up, put an app into the store, and it's causing major challenges, you can actually request for an emergency approval, and they will. I've actually had that done twice.
And it's quicker than 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah, 24 hours.
I see. So if you have decided to develop an app, should you start with iPhone, Android, or both together?
I would start with one. And it really depends. I mean, typically iPhone users spend more money and are wealthier, have more disposable income. I actually prefer starting with Android because you get a tighter release and review cycle. With Android, you can distribute the app much easier. With iTunes, before you put it into the store, you have to go through all these hoops to distribute your app. And with Android, there's no waiting period for updates. So you could distribute it to your beta testers, get feedback, and immediately cut another release and distribute and work like that. Another nice thing about the Android is that in the Google Play Store, they have a staged release cycle that will let you release it into the wild to only, say, 10% of the users. And if it looks good, keep increasing that percentage level up to 20, 50%, and then switch over to 100% when you're confident that there are no major issues.
But Android, though, has so many different devices, so many different operating systems. That must be a significant challenge.
It is. So the first thing is you don't have to support all of the Android devices. If you support, level 3 and 4 and above, you're in pretty good shape. That's going to get more than 90% of the coverage. Testing all of the devices can be a challenge because no one has all those devices in their pocket. But there are... Actually, I can highly recommend a service called AppThwack, which is a cloud-based system where they have real physical devices on a cloud that you can install your app on and test it. And one of the cool things about that solution is they have a UI monkey tester. So you install your app on these devices in the cloud, and thousands of monkeys are banging on all the screens, and it's recording crashes. You don't have to write any tests if you don't want to. You just let the monkeys eventually find many of the problems.
Hmm. Aris, is that available for both Android and iPhone?
It is, actually. It works for mobile web also. And it's relatively inexpensive.
What about launching for Windows Phone and BlackBerry? Is that something you consider worthwhile?
If I were a Canadian, I would consider launching for BlackBerry.
If you were from Seattle, you might consider launching for
Windows Phone. For Windows Phone. It's a very narrow market, and you can make money in those areas. There's less competition. BlackBerry is dying a quick death. But Windows, I haven't tried that yet, and I hope someday too, but not at this point.
No, it is still a very small market.
Yes.
Okay, so now that the app is in the store, how are customers going to find it?
Well, the best way is to be featured by Apple or Google. Some of the apps, but that's not easy to do. Some of the apps I've worked on have been featured in certain segments. For instance, the Plunder Android app has been featured by Google Play as a trending app in 6 different continents.
Does that have an immediate impact on downloads?
It does, but it's not the most front and foremost category. And Google does it by an algorithm, by looking at the rate of increase in number of downloads and installs.
So it requires you to be somewhat successful already.
Right. The best way is to have a social relationship with someone at Google or Apple. And I'm working on that.
Okay, let us know. Other mechanisms, marketing campaigns, things like that?
Well, there's also organic SEO, as I mentioned before, that if you focus on the appropriate keywords, people are more likely to find your app when they're through keyword search in the App Store. And then there's the standard promotional vehicles, you know, advertising your app on your website, sending emails to your customers. One of the clients I work for actually does a lot of Facebook mobile marketing.
Okay, so now you've launched your app, it's been tested, and you've started to get it featured in significant downloads. What's the measure of success?
Well, for an e-commerce app, the revenue generated is a key metric.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, if the app doesn't generate money, then it may not be a pleasant experience.
For apps that aren't, let's say, revenue generating, how do you determine that it has been successful or not? Is it easy to get analytics from your app?
Sure, actually, yeah. I mean, you can get analytics for free with Google Analytics. The app stores also provide metrics, the number of downloads, number of installs. I try to instrument all my apps with something called the Distimo SDK that lets you look at downloads, installs, revenue per particular marketing campaign. So if you sent an email with code X to your users, you can look and see, well, how many of the installs from the code X campaign generate revenue and how much revenue did it generate?
Have you used any of the products from the Boston company, Localytics?
Not yet. But as a matter of fact, I do have a meeting scheduled with them tomorrow morning.
What are you hoping to achieve?
So we are trying a new approach for marketing our apps called mobile retargeting. We're also looking for something a little bit better than Google Analytics. And Localytics has comprehensive analytics. They have built-in push notification. They also support mobile retargeting from other ad vendors.
What's mobile retargeting?
If you are looking at shoes in some other app or a browser, it can deep link you from that app into the other app and open it up in the context of shoes.
Hmm.
Knows you're interested in shoes.
From two distinct apps?
Two different apps or between a browser and an app, yes.
And then you'll be pushed the particular ad that suits what your interests are in.
Yeah, you can be presented with that product.
So now you have a successful app. How are you going to get a 5-star rating on Google or iPhone?
Well, there are black hat techniques such as hiring bots or humans to download, install, and generate 5-star reviews, but
what about
I would never
ethical
do that.
Ways of, ethical ways of doing
right.
This.
So the, you know, white hat techniques involve, number one, I think minimizing your crashes.
Hmm.
You know, testing before you release, making sure that you have crash analytics so that you can monitor your apps in production so that if you have crashes, you can find them and fix them. Doing usability testing, you know, putting virgin users in front of your app before releasing it. Maintaining compatibility with the operating system style guidelines so users will be familiar with how to use your app. And just basically listening to your users, you know, watching customer reviews, incorporating their feedback, and more of the same.
I see a lot of apps as well being quite pushy about asking for ratings. Please rate me, please rate me.
Right, so one of the techniques that we use, there's a component called Apparator. And what it does is it will, if you've been using the app for a certain amount of time, there's the assumption that you like it. So we'll wait for some period of time, some number of sessions, and then ask you, hey, would you like to rate this app? And if you say yes, it will take you to the App Store rating. If you say no, then it will put that feedback down a different path, such as an internal email, where it will not get exposed to the general public.
I was just going to ask that. Do you get the negative feedback, or rather the lack of feedback? And obviously you do.
Yes, but we want to make sure that doesn't go up on the public screen. Yeah, and actually managing reviews is very important. Like occasionally, people make mistakes. With one of the apps and one of the iOS 7 releases, there was a critical error that only allowed users from Alabama to check out. Needless to say, there was lots of criticism and negative reviews as a result of that.
So one bad launch can have a very negative impact on your score.
Exactly. But at that point, I implemented a white hat technique of, you know, prompting for reviews when I suspected that a user was feeling positive about the app, directing that feedback to the App Store, and then routing the negative constructive feedback down a different channel.
One of your book choices that stuck out was The Design of Everyday Things. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
Sure, that was written by Donald Norman, who's a cognitive psychologist. And he was fascinated by the world around him, the things in the world that were not designed well, like doors that couldn't open, teapots where you would burn your hand if you were pouring tea when the tea was hot. That book changed the way that I think about design user interfaces. Rather than trying to start with screens, I try to understand what is the user's conceptual model and map that into the design of the user interface.
And you apply that across the board?
Yes. Web, apps.
Gary Marcus, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.